Now, it's time for Something Understood with Mark Tully. This morning's program is called The Martyrs of Charterhouse Square.
Choristers at Westminster Cathedral singing at this year's commemoration of the 475th anniversary of the martyrdom of 18 English Carthusians. Some of the martyrs were hanged, drawn and quartered at Tyburn for refusing to acknowledge that Henry VIII and not the Pope was head of the Church in England. Others were simply left to rot in prison. The annual commemoration, established 6 years ago, takes place in what must be one of London's least known historical sites, the Charterhouse, once the priory of those Carthusian martyrs. It's tucked away behind the busy Smithfield Meat Market, in a square which was the burial ground for victims of the 14th century plague known as the Black Death. The choir at this year's special service was Roman Catholic. A Roman Catholic bishop took part, and of course the martyrs commemorated were Roman Catholics. But the Charterhouse is now an Anglican foundation, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, gave the address. This remarkable coming together is the legacy of those monks martyred nearly 500 years ago. Visiting the Charterhouse, I'm first taken by the master, retired surgeon James Thompson, to the chapel, where morning and evening prayer is said every day. It stands on the site of the monks' chapter house, where they would have gathered to make community decisions. We're right by the Jacobean pulpit and altar table, just below a Victorian stained glass window.
So, Master, this is where the monks actually decided that they would be martyrs, is it?
Yes, indeed. This part of our chapel was the chapter house of the Carthusian Priory, and it was here, in this place, that the then prior, St. John Houghton, as we now call him, announced to the brethren the detail of the Act of Supremacy. And it was here that they made their decision and said, "Let us all die in our innocency. Heaven and earth shall testify that we perish unjustly." And it was from here that they then began the process which eventually led to their arrest, their false trial for treason, and their martyrdom, some of them, on the 4th of May, 1535. They were seen to be leaving the tower to go to their execution at Tyburn, at Marble Arch, by the daughter, Meg, of Thomas More, who was then in the cell in what is now the Governor's House at the Tower of London. And she said they looked like bridegrooms going to their weddings.
Incredible, isn't it? It really is. There's another interesting thing, isn't there, that this altar, this is your chapel, but there was also an altar here when this was the chapter house, which is quite unusual, isn't
it? Yes, Carthusian chapter houses have altars in them. The monks don't sit around the abbot or the prior. They sit around the altar, which, of course, represents Christ, on which the Eucharist is celebrated, and the monks on lines on either side. And in the wall, just beside the altar there, medieval wall,
there, yes,
is the remains of the persina, which is a sign that there was an altar there.
The persina is where the communion vessels are kept.
Yes, and washed after the celebration of the Mass.
Yes.
And I think this caused a lot of confusion here in our understanding of the structure of this priory, because it was always thought that this was the monastic church, until the very exciting archaeological work was done after the Second World War, which showed that this was the chapter house and the church was further south.
Graham Matthews, a former cathedral organist, now one of the brothers who live in the Charterhouse, practices his Bach on the chapel organ before evening prayer. In the 16th century, the Charterhouse was bought by one Thomas Sutton, who founded a school and an almshouse here. The original school moved out to the country in the 19th century, and Sutton's hospital now provides a home for retired single men, known as the Brothers of the Charterhouse. Just as Charterhouse is hidden away in a corner, hard by the City of London, so the story of its martyrs is hidden too. They are the forgotten martyrs. But Sharon Jennings has written two plays to revive the memory of the monks who pioneered resistance to Henry VIII's takeover of the church in England.
Everyone knows about St. Thomas More, to a lesser extent St. John Fisher, but we don't know about the proto-martyrs so much. And they really were the first people who held out against Henry VIII. And I think the English Reformation is such an unusual Reformation compared with the rest of Europe, really depending on the character of Henry VIII. I think it's a very interesting juxtaposition between these men of faith and Henry, who was tossed about by things, events really, events, dear boy, yes. I think that's the interesting thing about it.
In one of Sharon Jennings' plays called The Visitor, Henry VIII visits the prison where three monks are shackled awaiting execution. The king seeks to persuade one of the monks, Sebastian Newdigate, who was once his favourite at court, to accept him as head of the church and swear allegiance to the Act of Supremacy.
What shall I do with you, then?
If, in your generosity and mercy, you would grant permission for me to return to the Charterhouse, my lord, my brothers and myself, we would be ever grateful.
Return?
To the Charterhouse.
Ah, I ought to have made myself clear on that matter. The fact is, you have nowhere to return to.
My lord?
Or at least very soon you won't. We have plans for that house, Cromwell and myself, and we shall be looking for vacant possession.
My lord?
The Charterhouse will be emptied, redeveloped and sold. It is an idea I have been considering for some time, and now I have decided. Yes, I might even use it myself as a barracks.
A barracks? A holy house of prayer?
Ah, now at last I've got to you. Ruffled those white Carthusian feathers a bit. Yes, a barracks, horse dung and guns and sweating soldiers.
And the brothers?
There will be no brothers. I'm getting rid of all that. I won't have such things in my realm. You will be just ordinary men of the world, showing proper allegiance to your king.
My lord, do you mean this? It is Cromwell's idea, surely.
It is my idea, Sebastian, and that is why it will happen.
All over the country?
All through my realm.
We are doing God's work, Your Majesty.
Some of you are, and some of you are rich, fat, lazy slobs, but that isn't really the point.
What is the point?
I see what you are, you monks. You are very far from the humble, stumbling creatures you so innocently describe. You regard yourselves as separate, apart, living in a realm of your own, with your own laws, your own customs, your own leaders, your own lord. And you hold your kingdom to be above mine. How can any monarch endure that?
Sir Thomas More, the martyr mentioned by Sharon Jennings, spent some years in the Charterhouse, testing whether he had a vocation to the Carthusians' austere way of life. Eventually, he decided to go back into the world. More's life and martyrdom were commemorated in Robert Bolt's well-known play, A Man for All Seasons. Georges de la Rue composed this music for the film version of that play. Thank you.
Here's the only arch, isn't it, into a cell which still survives?
Yes, this is perhaps the most ancient part of the monastic ruin here at Charterhouse, dating back to the end of the 14th century. And you see here the cell entrance. I'm sad to say that the other side of that wall now is garden, rather than the two-story little house that a monk would have lived in, surrounded by a little garden which he would have tended. But here beside it you can see the guichet, or the feeding hatch, where the lay brothers would bring the meals for the monks once or twice a day. And this is, as you can see, it's on a curve, so whoever delivers it cannot see inside.
So the monks really lived a secluded life?
The most secluded life. They were a community of hermits, and they spent nearly all their time in their cells. They came from the cells three times a day to go to the Priory Church, Mass at 8 o'clock in the morning, Vespers at 4, and then the midnight office at midnight, which would last 2.5 hours. The way in which Carthusians sing is very slow, and so the offices take some time. The other time they would come out of their cells would be to eat together about once a week on high days and holy days. And then on a Monday afternoon, they'd go for a crocodile walk out into the countryside.
Really?
And that still happens.
Like schoolboys.
Really? Absolutely, yes.
And do Carthusian monks, because you've taken a great interest in modern Carthusian priories, haven't you?
Yes, I've had the good fortune to visit both.
And do they still live like this, with the food put through
yes,
a hatch?
Yes, absolutely the same. They always say of the Carthusian order, never deformed, never reformed.
What is the meaning of such an austere life? Because it's not one only a very few people can possibly pursue, isn't it? Isn't it a bit of a running away from things? Or?
Well, I think the prayer of any monastic community is very important. It's certainly not a life which I could have settled into, but it's certainly one which I've very much valued exploring and trying to understand. And the interesting thing is there is a lot of interest in this particular order. I think you remember that series on the television about Worth Abbey. There was a visit to St. Hugh's Charterhouse in Sussex on the third one of those programmes. And then there was that wonderful film which was made at Le Grand Chartreuse, which is the mother house of the order, which has no commentary, and you just see wonderful scenes of the monks going about their daily life and bells ringing, chanting, but you really do get an idea of the holiness of the monastery, and it's a very enriching experience. It's almost a meditation to watch such a film as that.
Seigneur, prends pitié.
Pour Christ, prends pitié.
Seigneur, prends pitié. Sauve ton serviteur, ô mon Dieu.
Il s'appuie sur toi.
De ton sanctuaire, Seigneur, envoie-lui ton secours.
Les hauteurs de Sion, soutiens-le.
Sois pour lui une forteresse imprenable.
La bastion face à l'ennemi.
Que l'ennemi ne puisse le surprendre.
Et que le traître ne puisse le renverser.
Seigneur Dieu de l'univers, ramène-nous vers toi.
Montre-nous ton visage et nous serons sauvés.
Prions le Seigneur.
Chanting by the monks in the remarkable film Le Grand Silence, which made such an impression on the master. I love the idea of the Charterhouse monks going out for a walk in a crocodile once a week, just as I used to do when I was at prep school. But I think we made much more noise than the monks would have done.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Stat crux dum volvitur orbis. The cross stands while the world turns. The motto of the Carthusian order, familiar to many people in this chapel this evening. and a phrase which has many levels of meaning. Many levels which, as we reflect on the meanings of martyrdom, we may begin to penetrate more deeply. The cross stands while the world turns. So long as the world turns, the cross is there.
After the commemoration service at which he preached, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, spoke further about the generosity of the martyrs.
Whenever I think of a martyr from any tradition, the first thing I think of is this is a person who's given everything to God by the witness that their life and death represents. And in particular, in connection with the Carthusian martyrs, these are people who'd long since begun giving their lives to God in silence and stillness, so that when the point of crisis came, they were ready for it. They met it with courage. And because their lives and their deaths are a gift given to God, then I believe they're a gift given by God back to the rest of us. So that's how they become means of reconciliation. There's something so extraordinary about the generosity of the martyr, that it's not just a story you can use to score points off other people. It somehow becomes everybody's because it's given to God.
The Archbishop went on to explain how we can appropriate that gift.
I think above all we appropriate the gift that they give by paying attention to the details of the life and the death, listening to what they say. What is extraordinary, of course, is the way in which so many people, especially in the 16th century, they go to their deaths, Protestant and Catholic alike, saying, I don't bear any malice, I wish to live in peace with everyone. As if they're consciously reaching out and saying, I don't want this to be another mark of division. And I think if we listen hard to that, that's one way in which it can sink in for us.
A song composed by Henry VIII called, ironically, Without Discord. The martyrs, as the Archbishop said, bore Henry no malice for the discord that he did provoke. Emily Dickinson described another gift that the martyrs of every age have given us. In her poem, The Book of Martyrs, she sees them as gifting the inspiration to be courageous.
Read, sweet, how others strove till we are stouter, what they renounced, till we are less afraid, how many times they bore the faithful witness, till we are helped as if a kingdom cared. Read then of faith that shone above the faggot, clear strains of him the river could not drown. Brave names of men and celestial women passed out of record into renown.
Through a passage in a corner of the master's court, we've come to a small courtyard. This little yard symbolises the continuity of life from the days of the original priory to the present day. Called Wash House Court, it was the centre of important domestic activities, and it still is, as the master explains.
There were two separate communities in a Carthusian priory, the community of priests or choir monks, and a community of lay brothers who look after the requirements of the monastery, all the domestic duties and also the maintenance and so on. And they have a separate area, and this is where they used to be. And it still looks not unlike it did in monastic time, with the ancient wall and then some rather remarkable and good Tudor brickwork, because in fact originally it was an open space, and then it wasn't made a complete enclosure until the monastery was finished in the 1520s. And the wall, as you can see, the brickwork has the diaper pattern on it, and you can just see the tall chimneys peeking over the top of the roof.
Yes, over there, yes. Obviously, then, the lay monks were very much what you might call second-class citizens, in a way.
I think that probably was correct, because in the priory church, they sat behind the screen, whereas the choir monks sat in front of the screen. But I think nowadays, perhaps with slightly reduced numbers, there's much more togetherness, I think.
It also looks to me as though in this quite cramped, they must have been in this courtyard, don't you think?
Yes. We call this space Wash House Court, and in our present life it still has a domestic function, as it did in monastic times. The washing, the laundry is just through that arch there, the boilers are in front of us, and the kitchen is just beside us.
So it's back to its old function?
Back to its old function.
When the Charterhouse was a priory, the monks lived in closed lives. Now the Charterhouse is a very open place, and the brothers are involved in many different activities. Recently, the pianist of Charterhouse, Raymond Salisbury Jones, accompanied Xenia Denon in a concert of Russian songs. An elegy composed by Mikhail Glinka was one of the songs recorded at that concert in the great chamber of the Charterhouse. As we've heard in Sharon Jennings' play, when Henry VIII closed the priory, he thought it would be the end of the Charterhouse and its monks. But that hasn't proved to be so. The monks' martyrdom, their steadfastness, and their generosity of spirit live on as inspiring examples of courage and resistance to bearing malice. The monks themselves have become peacemakers, reconcilers. Their commemoration brings together the Anglican Church, first headed by the king who ordered their execution, and the Roman Catholic Church they died for. I end my tour of the Charterhouse with the master in the garden next to the present chapel. This garden stands on the site of the original chapel where the monks used to pray three times a day, and it's here that the congregation assembles for the actual commemoration of their martyrdom.
So, Master, this garden is where the priory church was.
Yes, so when you walk by and look through the railing, you're not just looking at a little piece of garden, you're actually looking at one of the most important historic sites in London.
But you wouldn't feel you were in the middle of London here, would you?
It's very quiet.
Very quiet. Yes. And this is where you also held your commemoration services.
It's very good to be able to use this place for worship again. And every year on the 4th of May, which is the anniversary of the martyrdom of St. John Harton and his companions, we come here to commemorate the Carthusian martyrs. After a service in our chapel, when we set the scene, we all process out here into Chapel Court. We read out the story of the passion of the Carthusian martyrs. And then the names are called out. And as they are called out, a member of our present community, the Brothers of Charterhouse, come forward, each with a red rose, and place it in the top of a Tyburn tree, or a model of a Tyburn tree, which forms a little memorial to each of the monks that are commemorated.
Dom Humphrey Middlemore, priest. Dom Sebastian Newdigate, priest. Dom John Rochester, priest.
What is remarkable about this commemoration is that here you are, an Anglican foundation, commemorating Roman Catholic martyrs.
Yes, I always like to regard these men as Christian martyrs. That was right at the beginning. They were the proto-martyrs of the Reformation period, and things hadn't really differentiated at that point. And I think that they are martyrs of this place, and it's right that those of us who are custodians of this place now remember them.
But what is really remarkable is that you bring together very high dignitaries of the Roman Catholic Church and of the Anglican Church. You've had Archbishop Rowan Williams here with the Roman Catholic bishop. This is surely a remarkable fruit of the martyrdom, isn't it?
Well, yes, I agree. I think it's a very heavy price they had to pay, but I think it's marvellous that this is bringing about good friendships between Anglicans and Roman Catholics, and also Methodists. John Wesley was a scholar at Charterhouse School, which was on this site, and we have a very good and cordial relationship with Wesley's Chapel in City Road.
And do you think this could be the beginning of something wider and deeper even?
I wouldn't want to predict too much along those lines, other than to say that it's a very small brick on a wall that needs to be built quite high. But nevertheless, it's a start.
The Master of Charterhouse, James Thompson, ending this week's Something Understood. The program was presented by Mark Tully and produced by Ellie McCange, with readings by David Holt, Emily Raymond, and Frank Sterling. Something Understood was a unique production for BBC Radio 4. Now, as part of Radio